Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of our listeners. Today's hosts are me, Eric from Willits High School, and
Princess Spate from Round Valley High School.
Colette from Round Valley High School.
Today our topic is grief and loss, restoration and growth. Grief is the term used to describe the feelings we have after a loss. This could be from the death of someone you love, or a pet, or parents separating, losing your job, losing the ability to do some things through a disability, and it's natural to feel overwhelmed with emotions like pain, anger, and sadness, and sometimes people will even feel numb. 40 years ago, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote On Death and Dying, a pioneering study of our fear of death and our inevitable acceptance of it. It introduced the world to the five stages of grief, which are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Understanding these stages may help us to frame and identify what we may be feeling. However, there are no typical responses to loss, as there is no typical grief, because our grief is as individual as our lives. We live in a culture that often approaches loss with cliches like get over it or quit feeling sorry for yourself and to tell you to keep a stiff upper lip. The truth is that resolving grief takes time, much energy, and the support of others. Grief comprises of the many thoughts and feelings experienced because of loss, while mourning is the outward expression of grief. As young people are in the process of becoming more independent of their parents and other central figures in their lives, they can feel reluctant to show signs of mourning as it reinforces a sense of dependence and vulnerability. Even so, all adolescents grieve when someone they love dies, though it may not be visible. It is important to let them know that the emotions they are feeling are acceptable and that you are there for them if they need to talk or if they even need company without talking. The first stage of grief is denial, which is a coping mechanism that helps us pace our feelings. We're often in shock at this point. The world becomes meaningless and overwhelming, and we can often go numb. This may last for weeks, as can pain and guilt. This is a period when many escape with alcohol and other drugs, but once the reality of the loss is accepted, the denied feelings start to surface, and the healing process can begin. The second stage of grief is often anger, an emotion we're taught to fear and also repress. When grieving, anger can be misdirected at our friends or family or even ourselves, or it can even be at the one who died, and supernatural beings if we believe in them also. Blaming ourselves or others for our loss is an attempt to justify it, but the release of the emotions suppressed during denial is important. The surge of anger can give us strength and also help us move on. The third stage of grief is bargaining. We enter a maze of what-ifs and if-onlys. We want life returned to what it was and are willing to promise anything to end our despair. We hope to awake from a bad dream. The fourth stage is depression, which is an appropriate response to a great loss. At this stage, friends will often say that it is time to move on with your life, but reflecting on memories and the subject of your loss may be beneficial and may also require some isolation. The feelings at this stage are important, and one should not be talked out of the experience. This depression is not a symptom of mental illness. The fifth stage is acceptance, and this isn't a time when everything goes back to normal and everything's all right. This stage is all about accepting the reality that our loved one is physically gone and recognizing that this is a new reality and it's also the permanent one. Things become calmer, the depression begins to lift, and people find realistic solutions to the problems posed by life without their loved one. We can never replace what has been lost, but we can make new connections, new meaningful relationships, and also new interdependencies. Of course, life is not always a linear path, and grief does not necessarily proceed in orderly, predictable stages. The person grieving will often break grief up into bearable amounts, and these can manifest in intense outbursts. Parents and friends need to allow for adjustment, but beware of danger signs. These include chronic depression, violence, substance abuse, or dramatic changes in personality, and these can all indicate a need for professional support. Today, we are going to discuss grief and loss. One of us have lost a parent, so we do have some experience with this topic. We will talk among ourselves for about 20 to 30 minutes, and we're going to open the phone lines for your ideas, experiences, and insights. We're in the Willett studio, and our phone number will be 707-456-9991. So let's begin our discussion with our experiences of grief and whether we recognize any of these stages in ourselves and how we may still be going through them. So for you two, how does grief affect your lives, or how have you been affected by it?
Well, losing a grandparent of almost a year ago, I still like have to keep coping with the feelings that come up, like, if I see a picture of my grandpa or, a memory, I can get triggered into, like, tears and have a breakdown, but other times I can, look back and be happy that he lived. It all just, depends on if I get triggered into tears or not, but, I think time really, really, helps with the grief, because as time goes on, you learn to let go and you learn to move on. Mm-hmm. And
so you really feel like you've gone through the acceptance stage then?
Yeah.
Right. So now you say that you sometimes will feel like it's brought on again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you have these brought on again, do you feel like other people try to repress them from you?
No. Usually when a memory is triggered and I want to cry, I'm alone and isolated, because I feel I can express myself more when I'm alone than having even a silent company there.
Right. So you actually can benefit from your own internal grief and learning from yourself innerly. Like, say you're alone and like would you write poetry or maybe like play music or something like that rather than talking to someone and expressing yourself externally?
At first, when it first happened, when he first died, I needed people around me. I needed everyone around me.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, after 6 months, it was more of a healing process that I had to do by myself, because I was going to be the only one that needed healing for myself. So,
right. So this is definitely, you wouldn't consider this an unresolved grief at all?
No.
It's very resolved and everything's been taken care of.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's very good. Definitely. So basically, my take on grief is that it's a result of a change, a severe change in a life that became as a result of typically a person or something of an utter importance that has a severe mental connection. So if you're experiencing something like grief, then it has a different impact than like losing something that wouldn't have a really high mental connection. So what I'm trying to say with this more is that if you don't really take care of it and really take time to go through the process instead of just trying to get over it like everyone says, then it can really not only lead to more problems later in life, but you also have to think about the present. Because if you don't go through the grieving process, then you're going to have problems later in life. People will probably bring it up to you. And it's that repetition of, you know, like that it's going to come up over and over again. And I think repetition is really an important part of grief, not only because it's something that people will do often. They often ask themselves questions over and over again that are really quite irrational, because they think that maybe the person will come back, and they ask themselves, why can't he come back? Why did he leave? And it's really actually just a coping mechanism for going through this kind of grief.
Yeah. How do you two feel that you've coped with grief?
I mean, me personally, I enjoy things like playing guitar, or like, you know, even sometimes writing things down. Mm-hmm. I mean, oftentimes I'll just write something on a piece of paper, and even if I just throw it away, it still makes me feel better. Mm-hmm. About it, knowing that I can write it down. Mm-hmm. And it's like, once you write it down, something about writing it and it being on paper makes it a lot more real.
So you feel that you can get a release through writing and playing your guitar.
Right, right. And it's almost like a soulful expression on a guitar. It's not something that you can say. You know, I mean, I think it's fair to say that with certain kinds of music, there's definitely a mood to it. Like, if I'm angry, then, you know, you might play something heavy and dark. But, you know, if you're maybe feeling, like, sad or something, it'd call for more, like, the blues or something like that. And, you know, even, like, vocally, I mean, you don't even have to say words, just something about the certain notes that you put together and the beat that you do it to. It really just, I think, allows for a certain tension to be relieved. And me personally, I haven't experienced a real serious kind of loss, but I, you know, just like everyone else, I've had bad days. And on any bad day, I can go home, and if I play guitar, I instantly feel better. And I feel like, you know, like that, it's not exactly the same thing, but even because it's just you're experiencing something bad, I feel like some sort of an artistic and creative expression of yourself can really help you recover from grief.
So you feel that music is your positive outlet to having a bad day or experience a loss, even if it's a minor one.
Right.
How do you think people that don't have a positive outlet, how do you think they cope with grief or a loss?
Well, I mean, like we said earlier, everyone's situation with grief is just as individual as their lives. You can't really say that each person can deal with it the same way. Some people may deal with it similarly, and some people, like, say, another person who plays guitar may even play a different kind of music that helps them. They may play a different instrument. But personally, I would think that any sort of creative output, like some people may enjoy even reading stories about other people who have gone through loss, writing their own stories, writing their own sort of poetry, or anything like that. I mean, it's just anything that you can do to release your emotions. And the thing is, though, too, is it doesn't have to be alone. The things that we've really mentioned so far have been, like, you know, guitar, like poetry. That's all things that you do with, that you don't do with anybody. So things that you could do with other people, maybe, this isn't exactly going too far off topic, but maybe you could start a band or something. Or even, like, you can make, like, a support group. You know, have some people that you can talk to about it, and people who maybe have gone through the same sort of thing, just so there can be that own, your own little personal comfort with them. And then outside of that, you can carry on your life without it having to be in your mind so much, because you know that everyone else has gone through it, and that it's okay to feel grief.
Colette, how have you seen people express grief?
Well, I've seen some, like, start, like, bonfires and, like, gather with family and friends and remember the good times. And I've seen some just start taking up drinking and not caring what people think about them. And it's just terrible just to see what someone waste their life away to alcohol due to someone passing away or them not achieving something they wanted to achieve.
Yeah, I've seen that as well, and especially teens. Well, mostly teens when they suffer a loss or they're trying to grieve and they don't really know how. There's an increase in sexual activity and drinking, and or they'll take up drugs. And I think it's due to the way society makes us feel that we need to just move on from the loss, or that it's nothing, it's not a big deal, but really it is. And teens, you know it because you can feel it. And so we're really not allowed to really grieve unless someone, like, lets you know that it's okay and there's nothing wrong with grieving and there's nothing wrong with going through the steps of grieving. But a lot of times I just see teens just hurting themselves, trying to escape the loss or the death. And it normally makes the situation a lot worse, because they're trying to drown out their loss and their feelings, but they're going to resurface again. And usually when it resurfaces, and it makes the wound just so much worse when teens go to negative outlets instead of finding a positive release that they can have outside of grief or outside, like, gets their mind off of everything and just lets them have a positive release.
Right. Well, I think it's a little misunderstood with young people, too, because a lot of older people might say that young people, you know, they can't really understand grief. And it is sort of true that older people, as a whole, generally, probably have gone through more grief. But I think a misunderstanding about that and the reason why that happens is because young people, well, older people, I think, too, no one really understands that. I think grief is sort of a strength thing. And once you've gone through it before, especially in a time when you're young and your mind is developing, that you need that, what is happening in your life is going to affect what happens later in your life much more. So for kids who typically haven't gone through a lot of grief in their life and they suddenly have this sort of shock, it affects them a lot more than older people who have already gone through it. So, mm-hmm. you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think children are more open to express their feelings because they're children and their mind hasn't really been tainted by what society feels that how children and teens should react to mm-hmm. a loss or grief. Do you think teens know how to deal with grief?
Well, I mean, for me personally, I haven't really ever been taught. You know, it's not something that really comes up.
Yeah.
In a conversation, you know, typically, you know, you try to talk about, you know, happy things. And that's part of the whole repression thing, because everyone does go through some sort of grief. But, you know, talking about it and that sort of thing, it's just, a lot of times people don't see it as healthy, especially once you've already recovered from it. It's just going to bring back old feelings.
Yeah, so what do you think teens feel like they're expected to do after a loss?
Just get strong, get over it. I mean, you know, we discussed that before, and it really is true, you know, like a lot of adults will tell teenagers, you know, like teenagers shouldn't really feel, you know, I mean, all teenagers feel depression because it's this overwhelming thing, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of hormones going around. First of all, your brain is still developing, and you haven't had these sorts of experiences, you know, before in your life. So suddenly when you have this, it's just this huge shock to you.
Yeah. What do you feel like the gender roles are for when a male loses or is going through grief and when a female goes through grief? Do you feel like there's more pressure on males to just get over it and move on and be strong men than there is for girls?
You know, I see it in society. But personally, me, I actually haven't really felt that, you know. I mean, maybe it's just because of the community we live in is a lot more accepting. But, I mean, I see it a lot, like, it's more of a media thing, you know.
Yeah.
Like, if on, like, a TV, like, you'll see a character in a TV show or something like that, they'll, like, if it's, like, a male, typically he'll be sad about it for a while, and then there'll probably be about maybe only one event that happens that lets him know that he needs to tough it out, and then he toughs it out. Whereas if you see a female, typically, you know, she has problems getting over it typically. And I mean, it's funny though. I mean, because it's weird how around here, you know, it doesn't really happen, but it definitely is, you know, a noticeable gender role for grieving and what's expected of males and what's expected of females.
Yeah. Like males are more expected to be the man and to take charge instead of,
Yeah, you're not supposed to show your weakness really and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. 'Cause that's what I think the media portrays nowadays is that, boys aren't supposed to cry. Boys are supposed to be strong and get over it and toughen up. And as we're girls are, we're allowed to grieve, but
so you don't feel like you're repressed at all. I mean, you don't feel like you're supposed to keep anything in at all.
It really depends on, around the people that I'm with. You know, there's certain types of crowds. Some of them just want to be happy and happy-go-lucky, and they don't want to think of anything bad because bad things don't happen to young people, but they do.
Well, what about, like, support, though? I mean, it seems like women are more eager to create support groups, you know. Like, if you look around, you're not going to find as many men's support groups as you are probably women's support groups around, you know.
Yeah, I think that's due because I believe women are... They're more comfortable with being vulnerable.
With showing their feelings and that sort of thing.
Yeah, with each other, as where men, they feel like they should be shamed for showing their true emotions and for feeling sad or loss.
Well, I mean, sometimes, you know, like I'll talk to someone who, you know, who just had a loss, and they'll be in a good mood, you know, and at the same time as I'm, you know, I want to help them with their loss, I don't exactly want to, you know, bring it back up again. And this is another thing with, like, you know, girls and boys, you know, because if, like, if it's a guy, I maybe wouldn't have as many feelings about that. It's like, oh, he's a guy, he can take care of it. Whereas with a girl, you know, I might feel like I should say something, but, it, you know, I don't know if I would want to say something, like, are they ready? Or is it going to cause an unnatural grieving process, you know, that wouldn't have happened before, you know, because it brings up thoughts that they wouldn't have thought of before, and then it makes them sad the rest of the day, and then brings up anger, you know. I mean, like, has that ever happened to you? Like, someone just mentioned it when you were in, like, a good mood, or?
Yeah, it has.
Did it help you at all, or?
It did, because the loss is going to come up anyways, and so I feel like the more you grieve and the more you just let your releases all out, I think the better, because if you have it all, like, built up inside you, it's going to come out somehow, and you can make your release, your grief release, come out in a positive way or in a negative way. And if it's in a positive way, I think it would benefit you more than anyone, because your thoughts get clouded when you're going through grief. So if you let grief get the best of you, and well, not grief itself, but if you let negative emotions take over, and you can get really clouded by them, and take it out in a really negative way and hurt yourself. So,
yeah. There was another thing that we talked about a little bit before the show, and it was about grieving being selfish and indulgent. And, you know, sometimes it is kind of looked at as selfish and indulgent. And I think one of the problems with society is that it's considered a bad thing to look at things indulgently. And I think, you know, being indulgent from time to time is a good thing, because we take, you know, it seems like we try to take care of so many other things, we begin to forget that we need to take care of ourselves, too.
Yeah.
And especially with grieving, you know, it's, you know, that's not messing around, you know, grieving, I mean, it can be serious stuff, you know, I mean, like, if it was someone that was really that important in your life and you suddenly lose them, I mean, it's not only just a mental thing, you know, I mean, maybe it'll change your entire lifestyle, you know. I mean, if you're living with the person, you know, they made you breakfast every morning or something like that, then, you know, it's not only the fact that your breakfast isn't there or whatever, or the fact that, you know, something that parent didn't involve, that was involved with you, and suddenly that's not there, but also that mental picture, you know, and so every morning you're reminded of that, and, you know, I can't understand why someone would think that it's indulgent, you know? I mean, if it's something that serious, then it should really be taken care of.
Right. Do you feel like people are, the way I see things is, like, you need time to yourself, and you need time for you to heal, because you're the only person that's gonna heal yourself. I mean, no one can really do it for you. You can't have someone come in and, like, try to wipe away your emotions and try to take away the feelings of you being bad. You need to, I feel, people need to open up, like, their feelings and, like, learn to live with them and learn to express themselves and, like you said, take care of themselves and make sure not only that they're physically okay, but that they're emotionally okay. Because a lot of times, I know people will look physically healthy, but inside, emotionally, they're a wreck.
Right.
So,
I mean, internally, that is where all the healing happens. But, I mean, you don't feel like it's important, I mean, to externally, I mean, to have people talk to you, too. I mean, you know, if you suddenly go through a loss and then you're in isolation for a long time, I mean, and you're just alone with your own thoughts, you know, I mean, you don't feel like things would get irrational fairly quickly.
Oh, no, I'm sure they would. I think people do need others around them, like when they're going through a loss. I know when I went through my loss, I wanted, in the beginning, I did want everyone around me. I wanted, and I had that support of my family and my friends around me all the time. And I think that's really important for people that are going through grief and have lost someone, is having even a person there just to be a company, not even say anything, just to be the silent company there. I think that's really important,
right,
to properly go through grieving, because a lot of times you don't want to be alone because you feel alone. And so that's like the last thing you want to be, is alone.
Right. So. You know, and I mentioned earlier, you know, like if you bring it up and you cause an unnatural grieving process, you know, me personally, if I were to be around people, which is definitely what I would want if I was going, if I was grieving over something, I would want people around me, but I wouldn't necessarily want people to bring it up unnaturally. I would just want the conversation to flow and just be as natural as it could be. Because when it starts coming up unnaturally, then you start to have these weird feelings, and then you start to get confused. And I think if you just let the conversation flow and just let everything you know, go the way it should be, then, you know, it's a much more realistic approach rather than, you know, just it completely ignoring it. I mean, if you completely ignore it, then that's going to be a bit of a repression. But also, if you talk about it and only talk about it, then the grieving may be a little bit more real than it has to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like people that have just lost a loved one, do you feel like they're treated differently than others? Like, if people approach them, like, do you think it's like the first thing people bring up, like, oh, how are you doing since the loss? Like,
mm-hmm.
I know I felt that way when I lost my grandpa. People would come up to me and ask me, I'm sorry, or tell me, I'm sorry about your loss, and try to comfort me. And my mind was elsewhere, and that just, it brought, like, mm-hmm. those emotions back up, and I wasn't even thinking about it. So that's something that I think people don't know how to, like, approach you, I believe, because, like,
yeah.
They don't really know what to say. They're afraid of, like, triggering you, but then they also want to, like, show their respect. So I think what people can do is just treat the other person that's lost someone normally, like,
right.
as you normally would, or else they're going to think that they're some kind of weirdo, but they're not. They've lost someone, and they're going through grieving. They're not.
Right.
Some...
Don't give them unnatural attention because, you know, they're going through a process
right.
that doesn't really need to happen. Now, I actually have a friend who's, you know, just went through a loss of a very important family member. And, you know, this person's had, you know, people that they didn't like or that didn't like that this person. And suddenly they're coming up to this person and now they're trying to act like they're friends because the person had a loss.
Right.
And, you know, why is this happening? You know, they weren't friends before. Why should this happen unnaturally? And I think that that's going to put weird things through your head. It's just going to create attitudes. It's just not something that should happen. Just let everything flow and really just let the process, you know, happen. And, you know, of course things are going to get, you know, serious. Like if you don't, you know, tend to it enough, I mean, if you're alone by yourself, then maybe you get too violent or you start using drugs or, you know, that sort of thing, then, you know, professional support is probably necessary. But for the most part, you know, like if it's you know, a sensible, reasonably rational person, then they're just going to go through the process as it should be.
Yeah. Do you think people that are going through loss need others there to help them go through the steps of grieving?
To help them through the steps. Well, I think knowing the steps definitely helps. Because mm-hmm. when you know them, then you know where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's natural. You know what should be happening. You know that you're not going, you know, you're not a freak or something, you know. And I think that that's like a big thing with like a lot of, you know, bad experiences. As a lot, you know, because our society focuses so much on good things. And whenever mm-hmm. a bad thing happens, you feel like you're so much different and you're so left
yeah.
out. And especially with something like grief, if you don't feel like you're natural or if you don't feel like you're normal in the situation, then it's going to make it probably 10 times worse.
Yeah, because you're isolated first from the loss and then isolated again from feeling like you are different from the rest of your peers.
That's mm-hmm. where we see it different, because you said that you wanted everyone to be there for you. But when I lost my mom just a few weeks ago, I wanted to be all by myself with, like, no one. I even turned off my phone, and there was people blowing up my phone and blowing up my friends' phones and, like, asking if I was okay. And then when I finally went back to school, there was people just randomly hugging me and telling me I'm sorry and everything. But I just wanted to be by myself with no one there at all.
So you feel that you can cope better internally on your own, like knowing the steps of grief, you feel like you can cope with it without having people around?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would just say, like, that there's time where you'll just need to be by yourself with no one there to, like, even to look at you or stuff, because, like, you want to be crying, and, like, I had to be strong for my little brother, and I felt I had to be strong for my older brothers, too, but I just want to be myself and just cry, but it was hard to be, like, strong for someone else when you can be strong for yourself.
Right. Do you think there's a pressure on you to be, like, act a certain way towards, like, family or even friends, like, even, like, so soon after your loss?
Not really, because, like, they know what's going on, and, like, one of my older brothers just re-enrolled for the Army because he didn't know how to handle what he was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just found out my other older brother wants to go to the Army, too, because he does not know how to handle it. And, like, now with my little brother, and, like, he tries to make everything okay and, like, joke around and stuff, but, like, he doesn't know what to say, when to say it and stuff, and, like, he'll bring up, like, my mom and stuff, and they'll just make me want to cry and, like, leave.
How have you found support through your loss?
I went back to church
mm-hmm.
and had some of my close friends there with me.
So you feel that your faith can be help, like, beneficial to you through to help you grieve, and you feel like going to church and such helps you through your steps in grieving?
Yeah, because, like, when I'm at church, I feel like I'm with my mom, because she always took us to church, and she always went to church when she was little, so it made me feel like I was there with her.
So you feel like going to church kind of is a way of going back to when she was still with you?
Yeah.
How would you, so you said that you like to be alone, so you feel like when you're alone, you can express yourself the most with grieving?
Yeah, kind of, because, like, there's no one there to sit there and judge you mm-hmm. and tell you what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do when you're doing it.
Do you feel like you would want anyone around you to talk to you or maybe someone that's gone through a similar situation to help you through it? Do you think that would be, something that would help you more through your grief?
I wouldn't say so. I think just being by yourself and with, like, family that's not going to judge you, or with friends that are just going to sit there and, like, tell you it's going to be okay and, like, know that they're there to support you through it.
So would you rather have a, a silent company there with you, or just when you have someone around, would you rather have them be there to talk to you or be there silently?
Be there silently.
So you like the silent company. Yeah.
Just to have somebody there. I actually like that idea, too. I mean, company is always comforting no matter what. You know what I mean? Even if you've had a great day, I mean, it feels good, you know? It's like, if I had a bad day, I would be perfectly content with sitting around the next day doing absolutely nothing as long as somebody else was there. It's just something about, you know, being lonely, especially after a loss. Because, I mean, that's really what grief is, you know, centered around is you know, a kind of a loss. And when you just have a loss and you're sitting alone, sometimes it's good to be alone with your thoughts and work things out. But if you're not around people at all, then you start to get this real feeling of loneliness.
Do you feel like you've grown any from a few weeks ago? Even, like, I know it's a short time, but do you feel like you've grown at all? Like, through anything that you've done, like being by yourself and trying inner healing and going to church?
No, I still think I'm still on the same page of when I seen her go.
So, there's some support groups. There's one, the Phoenix Hospice, and the number is 1-800-606-9596. And there's another one at Long Valley Health Center, and the number is 984-6131. And there's another Consolidated Tribal Health, 984-5115. And the other number for that is 485-5115. And then there's a Ukiah Valley Medical Center support group, and the number for that is 463-7394. So if you guys, any listeners, or maybe you want to call a support group or anything, if you ever feel like you need to talk to somebody, or you ever need that release, you can call them.
It's comforting to know that we have that sort of thing around here. Well, we're going to open the phone lines now for callers. The phone number is 456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call, and we'd especially like to encourage the youth in the listening audience. Please call in if you have insights or questions about grief and loss, and especially how it applies to the youth of our community. Some of the questions may be, have you experienced grief, and how did you cope with it? What has helped you pass through the dark periods in your life? Is it the process of grief and loss in youth that is really different from what middle-aged people experience? The phone number, again, is 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio, or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call in and be part of this discussion on what grief and loss is and how it allows for natural resolution. We'd really like to hear from you. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I was very glad. This is a great show, by the way.
Thank you.
I was very glad to hear you talking about music.
Mm-hmm.
And though you confined yourself to making music, I think music has great power for healing and catharsis, of purging of the emotions. And I have a real problem sometimes with music because it makes me weep a lot.
Right.
And, you know, I remember I stopped going to church because the music made me weep, and I was grieving over separation. And finally, I realized the young woman who's talking about wanting to be by herself to weep, I understand that. I felt very embarrassed to have just tears pouring down my cheeks. On the other hand, weeping is very healing. And I would like to hear from you folks what you think about the power of music to heal and to release emotion. And I'll take my answer on the air. Thanks.
Okay. Wow. Well, I mean, definitely making music, but I mean, especially hearing it too. I mean, you know, that was kind of in the back of my head, but for some reason I didn't mention it really. I mean, you know, a lot of times, you know, if I'm having a bad day or something, you know, like I can listen to a song that I really like, and, you know, if it doesn't always exactly make me feel better, but, you know, it's that feeling of commonality, or that, you know, that other people have experienced it too, you know, because oftentimes when you listen to a song, and, you know, it's a pretty mainstream song, and it's talking about something that sounds very similar to what you're going through, it's like, oh, well, if this happened to them, you know, I mean, it probably happened to a lot of people, otherwise why would it be so popular? And, you know, it's not always just the lyrics, it's a lot of times it's the tune of it, you know, like I also mentioned earlier that, you know, if I play guitar, sometimes I'll play like a bluesy tune depending on my mood, or sometimes I'll play like a more heavier tune if I'm like angry or something like that. And the same thing would apply even to listening to music and that sort of thing. I mean, you guys listen to music, don't you?
Yeah.
Everyone does.
Yeah, I think, like you said, playing music helps you get through a bad day. Well, I feel the same way. Like, if I've been having a bad day or things have just not been going my way, I'll go to my nearest piano and start playing whatever I want. And just doing that, I get a major release. And listening to, like, certain songs definitely helps me, like, feel better about myself and feel better about my day. And just having even 15 minutes of just listening to music and not doing anything else but listening to music definitely helps my mind get off things. And after I'm done with that, I'll be okay, and I'm like, I'm ready to take on whatever's next.
Right. You know, and with music, I mean, we mentioned earlier that when you're alone with your thoughts, it's a lot different than when you're with people, because other ideas are influencing your thoughts. So when you're alone, that's usually the time when you're listening to the music of your mood, if you're in a grieving time. And because the music, you know, it does give you a different idea. So it's not necessarily being alone with your own thoughts. It's almost like being alone with a presence that isn't there. This is when you're listening to the music, you hear the tune and you hear the lyrics, and it's something you can relate to, but it's without having a person there, and you don't have the pressures that a person would put on you. So, like, you say, like, you may be embarrassed by your depression. If you're listening to music, there's no one to be embarrassed in front of.
I think I can... For me, I can change my mood by listening to a certain kind of music. Say, if I'm having a bad day, I'll probably turn on some worship music, and I will be able to handle my day, like, way better than, say, if I'm listening to hip-hop or whatever else. But I think the kind of music definitely affects your mood.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Great show. Good conversation.
Thank you.
I feel like I'm just coming out of the woods from losing my father. It might have been like 3 years ago. Really hard for me. I felt really isolated. Being a mother, one of the most significant things for me was feeling like I was unavailable to my son. And a lot of friendships, I mean, you know, misplaced anger, wrong things said, you know, emotional wreck. I definitely probably destroyed any destructible relationship. And it definitely put my son through kind of experiencing a loss. And kind of tentative. I feel like that as I'm healing, that relationship's healing.
And I
think for me, one of the things that I started going back to church too, and I just let myself feel free to weep. And I think a lot of times I don't even know what I'm weeping about, and a lot of times other people don't know what I'm weeping about.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to not worry about it too much.
Just to let your emotions.
The most helpful thing to me was to have people that I could call or get a hold of that would pray with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish that we had, that every community had, a team of people that would be willing to pray, you know, that could be called anytime round the clock to pray, to have somebody to pray with, because you know, that two or more gathered. But when that was, and I'd be a volunteer to be one of those people. And anyway, so, and music. But I used to play music and write songs and whatnot, and I'm just now getting to where I can plunk around a little. I'm just, you know, maybe at just a few moments or a minute at a time, I can feel that. And then I just get kind of emotionally overwhelmed again, or just get too sad, but it's coming back, but real slowly. So, and it's hard for people that aren't going through it, who, or especially people that have dealt with loss, let's say more gracefully, socially gracefully, it really seems to be hard for people to understand anyway. So I feel a lot of compassion for anyone who's going through it and especially is having a hard time getting the right, you know,
mm-hmm.
other comfort. So thanks for your show.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, she mentioned, though, a lot of that she enjoyed comfort of others praying with her. And I think it takes a certain kind of person to enjoy, or not to enjoy, but to recover more from being alone, or to recover more from having other people around you and being in a support group or mm-hmm. whatever other type of thing, you know, would help you.
Yeah. Like you said, people will cope in different ways, and we had two different callers, and our first caller wanted nothing else but to be alone, and the second was the opposite and needed people there to support her and pray with her, and both are totally normal, and I think there's probably different ways that people grieve, and I mean some people, like Colette said, she likes when people are there but they're silent, so there's definitely different ways of dealing with it.
All right. Once again, I want to remind our listeners that we'd like the callers, we'd definitely have callers in our show. Our phone number is 456-9991. We could have any opinions on grief and loss, any insights. That would just be wonderful. I mean, that's definitely half of our show here. Everyone really does have different views on it. And a lot of it is really opinionative, because it is a very sensitive subject for a lot of people. It's not something that, you know, you can just really talk about with some people. Other people, you may be able to just, you know, walk up to them and talk to them about it. But, you know, it's really, I think the best way to deal with that sort of thing, if you want to help someone, is to just let things flow naturally, like I said earlier. Because if you don't know the kind of person and you just walk up to someone that you say you didn't like before or that you didn't know before, then you might end up offending them, because you're either coming up to them and they're not that kind of person that would enjoy it, or even if they do enjoy it, you don't know. Or if they do, you know, take solace in that type of thing, then you don't know how to really accommodate for that, you know, what's going to make them feel better about their grief.
Yeah, I think, why do you think people, like you said, if they don't like somebody and that person loses somebody, what do you think moves them to reach out and talk to them? Do you think it's out of guilt, or what do you feel that?
I definitely think it's out of guilt. You know, like, it's not necessarily that they feel like they're at fault, but it's that they'll feel like they're a bad person if they don't walk up to them, you know, because oftentimes, like, they'll see, like, their close friends, and they'll be trying to help them, but then you'll have, like, an acquaintance go up and help them because they say, oh, I know that person, too, I'm kind of friends with them. And then you have, like, the random bystander, or even someone who doesn't like them, or they used to be friends, or something like that, and they try to go up to them because they see people that they don't usually hang out with, so they think, well, maybe I'll be a bad person if I don't do that, too.
Yeah, when people approached me like that, I felt like it was kind of fake.
Mm-hmm.
I think if someone doesn't like you beforehand and they all of a sudden feel bad and want to try to comfort you out of guilt, I think that seems more phony, and I think people will think that that person's fake instead of actually finding any sincerity in their words or their comfort.
And you said you could totally pick this out, right?
Yeah.
Right.
You can. If it's someone that never talked to you a week ago and all of a sudden you experience loss and they're trying to be around you all the time, it's
very obvious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you experienced that same thing, Colette?
Yeah, I have. Like, just random people just come up and hug you and, like, you've never even talked to them before. And you're like, didn't even know you went to school with them. And, like, I don't know you. Why are you hugging me?
Right.
Because they feel sorry for you.
Right. And, you know, that's like even another thing, you know, too, like, you know, what if the person that you don't, you know, you don't know them well enough to hug them, you know, like maybe that person's like, you know, a non-physical contact person. They might get like really offended or like really uncomfortable, you know, and you put them in a position that they didn't want to be in the first place anyways.
Yeah.
So it can be a really, I think it's a dangerous thing. You know, you're kind of treading on dangerous territory. You know, if you, it's like, it's just not something you say. I mean, if it comes up and you're a good friend, then, you know, I think that they'll find the solace that they need naturally.
Yeah, just treating people as you normally would, like, whether you talk to them or not. Don't be all weird and say, like, oh, I'm sorry for your loss. Like, every time you see them, just be normal.
Yeah. And, you know, that was the thing, you know, because, like, I haven't really known a whole lot of people that have gone through loss, but the people that I did notice, or the people that have, I noticed, you know, that they tried to be in a good mood as much as they could, you know, and that is one of the stages, you know, that, you know, people are going to attempt to repress it. And, you know, if you try and intervene and try to get it out of them, you know, you're going to mess with their process.
Yeah, it's really important to let people deal with grief in their own way and not try to, like, intervene when you really shouldn't, unless they are asking for your company or asking for your comfort. But I don't think you should intervene.
Yeah. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I really appreciate your show. And I know earlier you'd said something about do we think that the experience of grief might be different for a middle-aged person as opposed to a younger person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little more than middle-aged, and I really think the experience must be quite different. I didn't really lose anyone who was very close to me when I was, in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, my mother died last summer, and I think it must be so much easier for me, even though it's been difficult. I think it must be much easier to already have thought a lot about the fact of death as a natural part of the life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something I thought of when I was 14 or 20 or 30 even very much. So I'm just acknowledging I think it's probably a very different experience in that way. And one other piece is that keeping things moving has been very important to me, and I mean that really literally. You've talked about music being helpful. I think music helps the emotions move, and just moving your body as well. Walking outside has been so helpful for me, and I might find emotions come and wash through that I thought had just died down or changed. Well, they come up in a new form because I'm moving. You know, we do carry our emotions physically, I believe.
Right.
And dancing might be when you feel you can, you know, by yourself. I think moving physically is something we've forgotten in our culture, how helpful and how powerful that can be in transition time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. Perhaps you have something else you can add to that. Thanks so much for the show.
Right. Thank you for your call.
Sure.
I like how she mentioned dancing. We didn't actually really touch up on that much, but, you know, dancing really does allow for the discussion about, like, any other sort of physical, anything physical. Really. I mean, it doesn't have to be, like, it could be, like, walking, it can be running. Like, I've heard of many people who have gone through some sort of loss or some sort of depression, and they say that just going for a run makes them feel much better. And, you know, with dancing, it's like you have the flow going, you have your rhythm, and, you know, it can even be with singing. Any sort of thing where you just let your emotions go in and you tie it in with your physical movement, something about it just creates a real ability to let things go.
Yeah. I've heard of people that actually run marathons because they heard, I mean, their loved one always wanted to do one, or their loved one was really into running or doing marathons, and it encouraged the person experiencing loss to do a marathon and train for one. And people that don't really like running will all of a sudden you know, want to just because they're motivated by their loved one. And in that way, it helps them to feel and to get, like, closer to healing and inner healing by that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, some of those support groups that we read earlier, again, the name of that first one was the Phoenix Hospice. Its number is 1-800-606-9596. The other is Long Valley Health Center at 984-6163. Consolidated Tribal Health at 984-5115. Or the number 485-5115. And there is the Ukiah Valley Medical Center at 463-7394. And these are all great support groups that you guys can call if you need help with this sort of thing. So, Colette, you say, I mean, how long ago was it that you lost, was it your mother, right?
Yeah.
That was about 3 weeks ago. And
yeah.
So, I mean, what stage would you say that you are in right now? I mean, if you could recognize it.
I'd say I'm still in denial because I'm not ready to let her go.
Really?
And, like, people will be like, I'm sorry about your loss, but I was like, she's not lost, she's still here, because I feel like she's still here, but I know she's gone, but I don't want her to go.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like, you knowing what stage you're in right now, do you feel like that's kind of helping you go through it more?
I guess so. Like, mm-hmm. It takes time to get to where you want to be, but it might take years, it might take months, or I don't know how long it's going to take, but once I get there, I know that it's going to be okay because she's still going to be here in your memories.
Right, right. I mean, I couldn't imagine, you know, just losing someone so suddenly like that. I mean, it really does take a strong person, you know, to, I mean, we really appreciate you, especially coming on the show after that. You know, it's very, very strong of you to do something like that. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to ask you guys to talk a little bit. I am sorry for anyone who's gone through a loss because it's very difficult to do. I was 17 when my nephew died, my first nephew died. So I've experienced loss for in many different ways. And I just want you to relate. I also had a niece who had a friend who died in a car accident. And if you guys could kind of address that, I know you don't have much more time, but this is a very important thing for all of us and how difficult it is for all of us to know what to do and what to say when someone loses someone. And thank you so much for the show.
Yeah, I think we kind of touched up a little bit on that. But, I mean, what do you say? Well, first of all, you know, I mean, you have to ask yourself, do you need to say anything at all?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we kind of discussed, you know, like, if you're not really close to the person or if you don't know them well enough to know what comforts them, then you should just avoid it. And, you know, I just let, if you would typically pass them in the hallway, then just pass them in the hallway, you know. I mean, it's, you know, because approaching them, if you think about it, in a situation like that, really isn't going to help them that much. You know, it's just going to make them think, you know, something else out of the ordinary happened. You know, they already had one thing out of the ordinary happen, you know, and having something else like that, it's just, it reinforces the idea that something's just out of place. So if you say something to the person and, you know, I mean, you should really be just close to them. And to know what to say, I mean, I can't really give out advice, you know, because I mean, like, I'd hate to say something and have it be the wrong thing. You just, it has to be something you know. And if there's nothing to say, there's nothing that you can think of to say, then maybe you shouldn't really say anything, you know. I mean, because for a lot of people, it really is a sensitive thing.
Sometimes you can't say anything at all, and people can get comforted by your actions. It's not what you can say, but what you can do for them. Say you go to their house occasionally, will take out their trash, do something for them that shows that you're there for them, or cook them a meal that just that you can express that you're there for them and that you're there to comfort them. So.
Right. Well, that has been all for, that's all we can do for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Eric.
Princess.
Colette.
Thanks to our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in a dialogue, so your call-ins are very important to us. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willett Studio. Youth Speaks Out is in cooperation with Safe Schools Healthy Students Bronco Project, building resiliency opportunities for the North County. For more information about the Bronco Project, please call Pat Sanborn at 459-5314 or email at psanborn@mcoe.us. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. Our next show will be on the first Sunday of March the 6th at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in March.